I really focus on the idea that there are plenty of alternative feed ingredients. The feed industry sometimes is concerned about the anti-nutritive factors, including dietary fiber, present in those feed ingredients. Through the research, we're trying to really apply, sometimes push the boundary to see how we may not necessarily improve those ingredients, but properly use them in the diet formulation.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the feed science industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today, with great pleasure, I'm hosting, and our guest today is Dr. Anna Rogovich. She is an assistant professor of nutritional biochemistry and poultry nutrition in the Department of Animal Science at the University of Manitoba in Canada. With that, Anna, it's a pleasure having you here. Welcome. So just to start it off a little bit, if you could kind of tell us a little bit about your background, how do you end up in this field, and how you ended up being there from in Manitoba?
Thanks, Carlos. It's really nice to be here. I'm glad that I've been invited to have the conversation on the animal nutrition field. I'm originally from Poland. I graduated from university, the most beautiful university in Europe, I may say, in Olsztyn. And I did my PhD and I came to Canada to do my postdoc. Okay. And I like it. I was working with the very well-known professor, Dr. Bogdan Slomiński, who was my mentor.
Okay.
And he introduced me to the advanced nutritional biochemistry, to the research on the enzyme technology, and then poultry nutrition, because we mainly use the poultry as a model. So that's my history. And I became assistant professor in 2019, continuing the research which I was involved since I started the postdoc. Collaborate with industry partners here in Canada and other researchers. So I'm glad and I'm excited doing this stuff.
Great. No, this is great to hear. So besides research, I'm assuming that you also have a teaching maybe appointment there.
Yes.
Just focus on research, maybe some extension too.
Yeah, mainly I do research. That's the nature of my appointment. However, I teach. I teach students on the poultry courses, undergrad and the grad students. I also teach the carbohydrate nutrition and metabolism classes, and I give the guest lectures from time to time. So teaching is actually very nice and thing to do. I like this. I treat it as a very pleasant distraction from the research. So that's the thing. In extension, I just do as much as any academic would do. So through the collaboration with industry partner and also being involved in other conferences and promoting my students as well, my grad students, I kind of advise them to be as present as possible within the industry and outside of academia.
And that's something very important, as you know, to be able to connect your students, your research work with the industry. That's at the end of the day what we're doing. Of course,
yeah.
Science is very important, but also making that science applied. I guess that's always our dream of all of us researchers. So
we also have to teach our students the soft skills, right? So we'll find themselves around, yeah.
And that's the key. You know, I always tell when I have my students and overall that, you know, you have your scientific skills, but you need to also your technical area, but also have to have scientific and other soft skills that make you a very good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So being said that, you know, you did mention that you did some PhD work research and then a postdoc over there in Manitoba, and you ended up getting that position there, complementing your research work. Can you tell us a little bit more of your research work. What do you focus? What are your main interests? And so maybe the audience can see a little bit about your work.
I focus on the utilization of enzyme technology in animal nutrition. I focus mostly on the dietary fiber, its properties, and how dietary fiber can be upcycled using enzyme technology, and then how we may actually slowly but steady say that fiber is not overall the bad or solely bad ingredient in monogastric animal diets. So that's what I foster. I foster diet-friendly diet, fiber-friendly diet formulation, how I call it. And so my research is focusing on the different carbohydrates evaluation and their abilities to hydrolyze the fiber components. And then also I focus on other enzymes as well. But dietary fiber as a substrate for the enzymes, that's my primary target. And yeah, I also work like in with the broiler chicken and the laying hens. I'm studying the effect of the enzyme hydrolysis products, and I also was involved heavily, and still I am in the evaluation of chemical composition, nutritive value of various feed ingredients, canola meal including, and so on. Because we focusing on the alternatives and trying to figure out how nutritionists may properly and with confidence utilize those alternative feeds stuffs.
Great. No, and I'm pretty sure that our audience are very interested to learn more about that. Being said that, for our audience, if you have any questions, please write them there in our comment section, and we'll be very happy to direct them to Dr. Rogovic so she could answer them accordingly. So following up what you mentioned a little bit about your research work, first, I'm a little bit interested to learn a little bit more about the overall fiber research that you have done and everything of like that. And of course, you being in Canada and mentioning about canola meal, can you expand a little bit more on that? What are some of your key things that you feel that our audience should be aware of overall what you're doing?
How to simply answer the question? Yeah, I really focus on the idea that there are plenty of alternative feed ingredients. The feed industry sometimes it's concerned about the anti-nutritive factors, including dietary fiber, present in those feed ingredients. Through the research, we're trying to really apply, sometimes push the boundary to see how we may not necessarily improve those ingredients, but properly use them in a diet formulation, based on the amino acid, digestible amino acid content, based on the available of the metabolizable energy, and so on. So we're trying to provide those numbers, provide this data. And I'm overall very positive. Like canola meal has been proved to be a great source of protein and a good source of fiber, as I see it as a good feed component. And other products from the other industries, like from biofuels industry, from ethanol industry, like in Canada, to at some point we use also wheat for the production of ethanol. Therefore, the DDGS will contain some wheat in it. So we evaluate those products, their values, and in some cases we actually demonstrated that they may have some prebiotic properties.
Oh, okay.
In there, so you know, you cannot really focus on the growth performers per se. They have to grow faster and more efficiently. Animal health is equally important. So it's
absolutely,
yeah. So that's the effect of this research.
Oh, and that's very important. I mean, overall, you know, like at least for example here in the United States, wheat in feed is very limited, or ethanol production of ethanol from wheat, and it's I'm actually in Kansas where there's a lot of wheat production, but it's just because of a lower amount being produced year by year, and then focusing more on human consumption. But, you know, we do DDGs from sorghum and of course corn too, and that also. So being said that, When you guys work a little bit with the weed and the on their DDG side of weed and everything, how do you compare all those products, and including, of course, also on the gut health, like you mentioned, animal health, and then of course also on the for the growth of the animal. Part of the idea that says we have the audience from all over the world, I'm pretty sure they're very interested to learn more about this alternative ingredients.
Well, DTGS has been studied very, very extensively. But what I could add to this, sometimes we do not really see it that way. Through the fermentation, using the yeast product for the fermentation, the yeast grew. Therefore, DDGS contains a significant amount of the yeast biomass in it. And as you may know, and probably audience know as well, that the yeast products being proven to be also very beneficial for animals. So this is some additional thing which is supplied together with the DDGS, right? So that's example. In my research, I focus not only on the local needs, because we may have a perspective, particularly if I'm working with enzymes. Enzyme has been used worldwide. Depends what kind of ingredients people can use or have no other choice, and they have to really improve those ingredients. If we look at the Asian countries, right, there's a plenty of byproducts. Canada and United States, we are very fortunate because we've got access to great ingredients, soybean meal being a standard, right? But I always think about those places where this become not really that accessible. And that's when enzyme technology can really, really improve and allow those people to use those alternative feed ingredients in a comfortable fashion and include them with confidence and knowing that enzymes may enhance their nutrient digestibility, may kind of give them release more nutrients. In a sense, that's how carbohydrates often works, because their nutrients may be encapsulated within the very sturdy complex cell wall, right? So releasing those nutrients, that's also automatically kind of make them more available for digestion or for fermentation, if we're talking gut. So I always seen my work and this using of enzyme technology on the global side, not only local.
And that's very important.
Because, yeah. You know, we all are responsible for the food supply and overall in another world. So I always got this social aspect of an effect of my work in it.
I agree with that. I mean, at the end of the day, research, you know, we, of course, you have to support in a way also the local industry, but we live in a globalized world, but and everything is connected now these days. So whatever you do there, it gets implemented somewhere else, eventually will come back. And I think
that's true.
And even on the research side too, between collaborators too, even if they're not in the same place. And so being said that, for our audience first, of course, please like us there when you're seeing this podcast. And we always like to hear like a thumbs up from our audience. Following a little bit, Anna, what you were talking a little bit, enzymes. I know it's a very important topic on your, as I understand from your whole work there in Manitoba. Can you please tell us a little bit more about your overall work? I know you have touched a lot of it into it already, but what are the key things so our audience can start like putting their mind more into enzymes and their benefits and all the different key aspects that are there?
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like there's a lot of research done on enzyme technology those days and a lot of published. And fair enough, because that really shows that the enzyme technology is still very intensively evolving. There's a massive progress in this technology on many aspects, right? So I may talk about progress in a bit, but I wanted to say that enzyme technology is diverse, because we're talking about the specific substrates that enzymes may target.
Okay.
So phytase is being a commodity those days, and that's fabulous. The progress in the phytase research on the phytase and industry being involved is phenomenal. So so that give us lots of benefits, including that the fact that we may limit a little bit of phosphorus sources or calcium sources as well. That will have a good effect on the environment as well, and animals will receive the nutrients they need. The another type of the enzymes that will be the proteases. So once again, the progress is huge there, and then the proteases are used to basically improve the protein digestibility. That's the simple effect, but also proteases may mitigate the risk related to anti-nutritive factors such as trypsin inhibitors. Right, so that's the thing, and carbohydrates is my favorite topic. So they help animals to utilize the complex carbohydrates. That is starch, which is a complex carbohydrate. So amylase is used in many enzyme preparations. That will be also another complex, maybe problematic carbohydrates. Those are the galacto-oligosaccharides. So enzymes may target that. That would be the invertase or alpha-galactosidase that targets this. And finally, the fiber components, such non-starch polysaccharides. Everybody's talking about xylanase. We're talking about the cellulases, right? There are other ones, like also mannanases, beta-glucanases, and the pectinases. We have to remember that pectinases are used in the food industry, but pectic substance present in the fiber fraction are much more complex. Well, I may say every fiber is very complex. Therefore, those specific enzymes target those individual components, and they may debranch them to the simple or simpler, less branched fiber fractions. And that's where my research is focusing on as well. Like those smaller or more soluble fiber fraction, maybe then become fermentable. That's will really fit the definition of the prebiotic, and that's this cascade of the positive reactions, because those enzyme hydrolysis products, they may serve as a prebiotic, so the beneficial bacteria will utilize them and produce short-chain fatty acid or volatile fatty acid. That will really improve the animal health, gut integrity, because the specifically butyrate is really well responsible for the good condition of the gut, and the short-chain fatty acid, they've got like enormous role in many of the metabolic pathways in organisms. So that will be the entire book in just literally on the effect of short fatty acid. So what I'm, and probably lots of nutritionists see, that we feed animals the diet, but animal is not the only creature there. There's entire microbiome.
That's right.
And those bacteria, they are not doing the side job. They're part of the team, right? So you have to take good care of it. And that's where really prebiotics are coming. So with enzymes, and sometimes even by the natural occurrence of the fiber, feed ingredients are functional. They not only provide the nutrients, but they also provide the prebiotics to feed the beneficial bacteria. There are other mechanisms as well of the protective role of the enzyme hydrolysis products. And even you may say, you know, the enzymes are produced by bacteria.
Yes,
by the, like, but that's the way of the of the biotechnology to produce the enzymes. So let's say if the enzyme hydrolysis products are introduced to the microbiota within the gut, those bacteria are kind of reacting on it. So it may also be the seen as an inducer for microbiome to produce even more of the beneficial enzymes themselves. So this mechanism has been studied. I've never been involved in it, but I like this concept. So as I mentioned at the beginning, plenty of research done on enzymes. Yes, because there is still lots of things to explore.
And you mentioned a lot of very important things about enzymes and enzyme technology. As I understand, and you mentioned, it keeps evolving fairly fast, you know, because of the biotechnology. So being said that, first of all, for our audience, if you learned something today, please share the video. We really appreciate it if you guys do that. So going up back again with the conversation, I see several things that I'm interested in. I know there's a limitation on time, but one that is always very important, especially when you're working with soybeans and soybean meal, is of course the presence of anti-nutritional factors. And you mentioned a little bit about enzymes being able to mitigate those effects up to a point. Can you expand a little bit on that and tell us a little bit what will be the key thing to understand? So if I am a feed miller or mm-hmm. in the animal production industry, I should consider in cases that I'm not getting the right quality of product in terms of, for example, soybean meal.
Yeah, so we know that the soybean meal or soybean products may contain the trypsin inhibitors unless they were sufficiently processed. And this issue may be mitigated by using the proteases that will kind of allow the endogenous enzymes to perform better. But also, that depends. The nutritionist should know what is in it, what is in the feed ingredients. So all plant-derived ingredients will contain phytate. Right.
Yes.
So that's kind of makes the phosphorus or calcium less available. So as I said, that was the main and the significant improvement in the nutrient utilization, that the phosphorus is and other minerals as well may be better utilized also. So this anti-nutritive factor in a form of phytate will be then overcome, then some enzymes also they mitigate the negative interactions. For example, they improve the absorption of the nutrients because they may kind of reduce the dietary proteins to a binding of dietary proteins to the other factors. So that will be as well kind of like a fiber, certain fiber components. So there is a field and a room for improvement if it comes to the anti-nutritive factors.
And that's very good information. I mean, at least I put my hat as a feed miller, and either commercial or integrated, that there's alternatives in case you're not getting the right quality of cook level, let's call it that way, for example, in soybean meal.
There's a significant amount of the non-starch polysaccharides as a main component of the fiber. That's once again, all spectrum of the carbohydrates is called also commercially NSPAs, right? So they really support them. To some extent, of course, they will not hydrolyze everything, but to some extent, they made the branch or hydrolyze those polysaccharides into the smaller molecules, lower weight molecules, let me say.
That's, of course, that's very helpful from that perspective. So, mm-hmm. And I know we could talk a lot about different many topics on enzymes. One that I'm very curious about, and that you did mention about the role of enzymes to mitigate the environment, the issues with the environment when you have an animal production on a monogastric side, for example. As you know, it depends a lot where you're located and everything, but in essence, the population is concerned about it. I mean, we see it more issues and with ruminants than actually monogastric up to a point. What would be your take or maybe your recommendation in terms of the use of enzymes and how to help with the environment?
So you know, we all are really concerned about the environment. Consumers are not really much different than animal producers or nutritionists. Like, this is our world, so we've got responsibilities. By making the animal production more efficient, That is overall the benefit to environment. More efficient means using the less food, and reducing the time of the production means time of excreting the certain digested nutrients. Enzyme technology by improve it by reducing the phosphorus and nitrogen runoff from the diet, because they become more available. Also, diets could be formulated and can be formulated using matrix, means reducing nutrients, because they will be released from those hidden within the diet. So that's additional benefit of using the enzyme technology. So, you know, lower protein inclusion, because protein may be better digestible. Less phosphorus, because phosphorus may be taken from those finicky phytate, right? So, and then less nitrogen excreted, less ammonia, right? So monogastric, as you said, they're not really that crazy pollutant.
Correct.
But you know what? We've got, there is some part. So if it could be mitigated, that's, it's even better.
Everything is connected, and whatever you could do to help, you know, I come from family of ruminant cattle producers and swine producers. So, of course, there's a difference in terms of that. But we could help in both sides. That is fantastic, you know.
And also another thing, if some alternative feed ingredients or locally available feed ingredients can be utilized. Canola milk could be example. It's a byproduct of the, we call it, like, well, byproduct of the oil industry, right? Canola is grown, or rapeseed is grown for oil. So we, with the enzyme technology, and those ingredients could be better utilized by and recycled by animals when added to the feed. So if the local feed ingredients can be good sources of protein, because they may be enhanced with enzyme technology, the whole transportation and other traits and issues can be avoided. So that's still got the effect on the environment.
Yes, it's what that's a different perspective. And I think also very, very important. I think probably one of the key pollutants overall is transportation of things, including people. So being made to reduce volumes of transportation and feed ingredients and animals and everything is very, very important.
It's time for our famous three.
So, and as you know, we're kind of coming close to the end of overall the time we have allocated for today's podcast. I'm pretty sure that our audience have learned quite a lot today. So, of course, we suggest them to subscribe to the channel by clicking on the bell to receive our notifications. And then, of course, but just to pretty much wrap up today, we always like to tell our audience, if they want to continue learning more, for example, about enzymes, that you have done a lot of work, what would you recommend them to look for? What resource would that be?
You know, well, there's a plenty of the academic publications and so on, but I always advise even my students, undergrad, grad students, to look at the technical publication. In Canada, we've got I really love this magazine, the Canadian Poultry Magazine.
Okay.
They also indicate information about the current research. So because it's connected with our granting agencies, so translate the research which we conduct, introduce that the science is active in this field, address any other industrial related issues that I'm referring to poultry. But this is just example. Many of the technical magazines, they're interesting. The informations are such that if someone is more interested, may literally go and study this themselves using the internet resources, right? So I was always keen on those technical magazines.
I will actually look it up myself. I've never seen the Canadian Poultry, so
it's fantastic. I really recommend it.
I will actually take your word and do it. My background is not nutrition, so I'm always very eager to learn many things on that. So, and besides that, and thank you for that recommendation. Thinking outside of your work, your research, agriculture, animal production, what other book will you recommend to our audience? Something that you take pride in reading or recommending, or a resource, so just that they could might use for them.
Cookbooks. That will be the first one.
Yeah, I love that.
And if I could recommend the audience to take a break from the serious stuff and read something which is pleasant to read, I recommend reading anyways. It's a great exercise and a mind cleaning thing. I like to read some books when I may laugh. And then have fun and forgot where I am. So to kind of decompress, I literally really, really advise to read and to move somewhere else kind of in your mind. So I don't have any specific proposition. There are some from on Canadian market, but that could be the topic for the next podcast.
There you go. Yeah, no, that.
Please read and get relaxed. Nothing heavy, nothing problematic, right? So
that's very important. And you know, I always think a little bit the same, because it just takes you to a different world, and you're sitting in one place, and that's always very good. Just one thing for our audience, of course. Please visit our website, wisenetics.com, to learn more about the other podcast segments that we have on poultry, swine, dairy, beef. Of course, this one on feed manufacturing, and of course, on pet food. Anna, just to wrap up a little bit, you know, you're an assistant professor there at the University of Manitoba. You advise students, and of course, you have a lot of people you're trying to shape them to go into the industry or academics or any place that they will end up going after graduation. Being said that, what would, in your opinion, will be a recommendation to tell a young professional, somebody in grad school, somebody in the undergrad, or just somebody that is in the industry that is growing their career? What would be a good piece of advice that you tell them that you feel that is something that you always must have shared? Or several, I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, when we're in the academic world, we're always thinking about those things. So what will be one of those?
The advice will be talk to people. You never know. You may sit next to someone in the airplane that may shape your career.
That's correct.
So being open to other people, being curious in their opinion, and willing to listen and to share, that is the key. I had several things, probably talking got me into trouble, but several situations when it was really, really so beneficial and life-changing for me. So being open, talking to people, being kind of social, in my opinion, this is the thing to do, right? So either if it leads you to a little bit of trouble, that's still okay. Yeah. and another thing is curiosity. You know, once I remember I had a field trip with my class, and there was one student asking questions to the farmer, and the farmer said, like, gosh, you asking really good questions. And she, with this natural response, said, yeah, because I'm curious. And it was so nicely said like naturally. And I said, shit, that's the actually the key to the success. Curious people will be also resourceful, right? Those days you may find the answers very, very quickly, right? So curiosity is the thing I would advise students and researchers to look around and sometimes see the things from the different perspective as well.
Great. No, those things are great, and that they're fantastic piece of advice. I'm pretty sure that our audience will take them very well. So with that, thank you very much, Anna. We really, really appreciate you joining us today. With that, for our audience, this concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast, presented by Wisenetics. We had Dr. Anna Rogovich, assistant professor in the Department of Nutritional Biochemistry and Poultry Nutrition from the University of Manitoba in Canada. Thank you for the audience for joining us today. Please, everybody, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on any future episode that we will have. And if you enjoyed this today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very valuable for us, and we take very pride to learn all about that. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.